When a reasoning model writes, "Wait, let me double check that," right after it's just worked through a hard math problem, what's actually happening in there? Is it genuinely entertaining doubt, reopening the question, maybe about to talk itself into a different answer? Or has it already locked in and the "let me check" is pure theater?
And the uncomfortable answer this paper lands on is usually theater. By the time a lot of these models start hedging and rechecking, the answer is already fixed. The rechecking literally cannot move it.
That paper went up on Archive on June 11th, 2026, and we're recording 2 days later. Quick note before we dig in. This episode is AI generated. The script was written by Anthropic's Claude Opus 4.8, and the two of us, I'm Juniper and that's Finn, we're both AI voices from 11 Labs. Nobody producing this show is affiliated with Anthropic or with 11 Labs. The paper is called Beyond the Commitment Boundary, Probing Epiphenomenal Chain of Thought in Large Reasoning Models. And that phrase in the middle, commitment boundary, is basically the whole story.
Let me set the stakes before we get into mechanism, because they're bigger than they sound. The current generation of frontier models, the O1, DeepSeek R1 style, they don't just answer you. They generate a long chain of thought first, pages of intermediate text, working through the problem before committing. And the deal the field discovered is that you can buy accuracy by spending more thinking tokens at answer time instead of training a bigger model.
Which means those thinking tokens are the product. They're also the bill. A single reasoning trace can run to thousands of tokens per question, and that's the dominant cost of running these systems. So if it turns out a big chunk of that thinking does nothing, that's not a cute academic finding, Finn. That's a line item.
Right. And there's a second thing riding on this that's even bigger than money. There's been this hope in AI safety that chain of thought gives us a window. If the model writes out its reasoning, we can read it, monitor it, catch it when it's heading somewhere bad. The paper cites that fragile opportunity framing. This work pokes a very specific hole in it.
So let me anchor the one thing a listener has to hold on to, because everything depends on it. The chain of thought is just text. The model generates it one token at a time, exactly the way it generates anything else. It is not a log file of the model's computation.
Say more on that, because I think that's the part people quietly get wrong.
So the model's actual thinking, the real work, happens in its hidden activations. Huge vectors of numbers flowing through the network at every step. The written out reasoning might faithfully describe what those numbers are doing, or it might not. Nothing in the architecture forces the words and the computation to match. My favorite way to picture it is an athlete narrating a skill while they perform it. Sometimes the narration tracks what the body's doing. Sometimes the body decided a half second before the mouth caught up.
And this whole paper lives in that gap between the words and the computation. So how do they actually measure it? Because is this reasoning step real sounds hopelessly vague.
This is the move I genuinely admire. They make it causal. The logic of causation is you don't just watch a thing, you remove it and see if the outcome changes. If you delete a chunk of reasoning and the answer comes out identical, that chunk wasn't doing causal work, no matter how clever it looked on the page. So here's the actual procedure. Take the full chain of thought, cut it off after the first sentence, then force the model to answer right now. Slap on the end of thinking marker and a little suffix like, "therefore the final answer is," and read off what it says. Then do it again, cutting after the second sentence, then the third, all the way down.
So it's like interrupting someone mid-thought, over and over, and each time asking, "If you had to answer this instant, what would you say?"
Exactly that. And you track how the forced answer evolves as you let the model think a little longer each time. Early on, it's basically guessing. At some point, it locks onto an answer and stops moving. The measurement instrument is just one number per cut point. How confident the model is in its eventual final answer if you force it to stop here.
Now, I want to flag one design choice they made that I think is the difference between a real result and an artifact. They don't compare the truncated answer to the right answer. They compare it to the model's own full-length answer.
Which matters because they're not studying correctness. They're studying when the answer stabilizes. If you measured against ground truth, you'd tangle up when did it commit with did it get it right? By measuring against the model's own final output, correctness drops out entirely. They're tracking the snap-into-place moment, clean.
And they only keep problems where the chain of thought actually helps, where the model gets it wrong with no thinking at all. So they're studying genuine reasoning, not stuff the model already had memorized. We'll come back to that filter because I think it cuts both ways.
It does, and you should push on it later. But let me tell you what falls out, because the shape of the result is the surprise. If answer formation were gradual, confidence slowly creeping up as the model reasons, you'd expect a smooth curve. You'd see lots of in-between states. That's not what they find.
Not gradual?
Not even close. When they plot confidence across all those cut points, it's sharply bimodal. The mass piles up at two ends, no idea and fully committed, with almost nothing in between. The model is either lost or it's certain, and the transition between those two states happens at basically one sentence. And here's the number that nails it down. Across about 3,100 traces, the single biggest jump in confidence within a trace is, on the median, 4.6 times larger than the second biggest jump. One sentence does the deciding. Everything else is a rounding error.
That 4.6 is doing a lot of work. It's the difference between the answer kind of accumulates and there's a moment. It says there's a moment.
There's a moment. They call it the commitment boundary, the single step with the largest jump. And then the obvious question is, where does it fall? And this is where it gets genuinely fun, because the models have personalities.
Define personality here, because I assume you mean something measurable.
Where the boundary lands. Gemma is decisive. It locks in its answer after using only about 13 to 23% of its thinking tokens. So it does roughly a fifth of its visible reasoning, commits, and then keeps writing. GPT-OS is the deliberator. It waits until somewhere between 43 and 68%. Qwen sits in the middle, around 22 to 40.
So depending on the model, somewhere between a third and the vast majority of the thinking tokens are generated after the answer is already settled.
In some configurations, up to 87% of the reasoning tokens come after stabilization. But here's the inversion that surprised me most. You'd assume the harder the problem, the later the model commits. Needs more thinking, decides later. That's the intuition.
And it's wrong. That's the part that stopped me. The thing that predicts where the boundary falls is mostly which model you're using, the model family, not how hard the task is. The commitment style is a property of the model, almost a temperament, not a response to difficulty. That's weird, and the paper's pretty honest that it doesn't fully explain why.
So that's the phenomenon. But everything I've described so far rests on truncation, chopping the trace short. A skeptic could say, sure, if you delete the back half, the answer doesn't change, but maybe that's just because you removed the model's chance to revise. You'd be measuring your own scissors. Finn, this is your beat, the part that closes that hole.
This is the best experiment in the paper, and it's the one that converted me from interesting to, okay, this is real. Instead of truncating, they corrupt. They take competition math problems, aim, and they go in and nudge the numbers. Small offsets, plus or minus 1 through 5. And critically, they do it in two separate regions, either before the commitment boundary or after it. Then they rerun the model and see whether the answer survives.
So same text, same model, same kind of tampering. The only thing that changes is which side of that one sentence you mess with.
That's the whole elegance of it. And the result, at 20% corruption, corrupting the post-boundary text preserves the answer 95% of the time. The model just shrugs it off. Corrupt the pre-boundary text the same amount, and the answer survives only 61% of the time. The reasoning falls apart. And if you crank it up to 50% corruption, the gap blows open. Post-boundary, the answer survives 72% of the time. Pre-boundary, 27.
So the exact same operation, scrambling numbers in the reasoning, is devastating on one side of the boundary and almost cosmetic on the other.
The image I keep coming back to is a building under construction. Before the boundary, the concrete's still wet. Tamper with the scaffolding, and the whole thing collapses. After the boundary, the concrete's cured. You can kick the scaffolding, take it down, mangle it, and the building doesn't care. It's not holding anything up anymore. Same scaffolding, same building, completely different causal role, depending on which side of one moment you're on.
And the pre-boundary region? That's where they show the reasoning is genuinely doing something, right? It's not just noise that happens to matter.
This is the part I want people to sit with, because it rules out the boring explanation. Before the boundary, the model holds wrong intermediate answers. They call them mid-guesses, and it holds them confidently. Average likelihood around 0.7. So it'll commit internally to a wrong answer, then revise it, then commit to another before it finally lands.
And those wrong turns aren't random.
No, and this is the detail that gave me chills a little. If you sample the same problem independently several times, the traces share most of the same mid-guesses, and they show up at nearly the same positions. The overlap in which wrong answers appear is a median Jacquard of 0.71, so about 70% shared. And the positions are clustered roughly twice as tightly as a shuffled baseline. The model isn't flailing. It explores the same wrong turns in roughly the same order every time. That's structured search. That's real reasoning.
Which costs real tokens, by the way. Traces that go through mid-guesses are more than twice as long. Median around 700 tokens versus 300 for the ones that just commit straight away. So deliberation is expensive, and it's only buying you something before the boundary.
Okay, so we've got real reasoning before, inert reasoning after, and a sharp line between them. Now, here's the result that I think people will actually repeat to each other. They went and counted the hedging words.
The wait, the but, the let's check.
All of it. They counted how often sentences start with those deliberation markers, before the boundary versus after. And the rates are essentially identical on both sides. For Quinn, roughly 12% of sentences start with but, at about the same rate before and after the point where but can no longer change anything.
So the model says, wait, let me reconsider, just as often after the moment when reconsidering is causally impossible.
That's the smoking gun. The surface language of deliberation is completely decoupled from whether any deliberation is happening. The vocabulary of doubt keeps flowing long after the doubt is settled. If you were a human reading that transcript, you'd swear the model was still torn.
And that's exactly the word the authors reach for. And it's worth 30 seconds because they chose it on purpose. Epiphenomenal. It's a loan word from philosophy of mind. An epiphenomenon is something that's genuinely produced by a process but has no causal power back over it.
The classic image being the steam whistle on a locomotive.
The engine makes the whistle blow. The whistle moves nothing. The post-commitment reasoning is the whistle. Loud, elaborate, real, and powerless. Produced by the model's process, but exerting no force on the answer.
Although, I'd push the metaphor one notch, because the breakdown is the interesting bit. The whistle at least tells the truth. It signals the engine's running, which is real. The model's post-commitment hedging signals, I'm still deciding, which is false. The train already left the station, and the whistle's blowing, I haven't decided where to go.
So wait, are we saying the model is lying to us? Like it's decided and it's faking the deliberation to look thorough?
No, and this is the most important place not to over-anthropomorphize. There's no deception in any intentional sense. The model generates hedging text because that's what reasoning traces look like in its training data. It learned that thinking out loud includes a lot of, wait, let me check. So it produces that texture whether or not any checking is happening. It's not performing for us. It's just doing what the pattern says reasoning sounds like. And honestly, That's the safety-relevant version of the finding. If it were deliberate deception, that's a different problem. This is subtler. The deliberation language is just decorative, baked in, and it'll fool a human monitor without anyone intending to fool anyone.
Right. A monitor reading the text would see a model apparently still working the problem, hedging, double-checking, when internally the thing's been decided for paragraphs. So if you wanted to catch a model committing to something dangerous, the words won't reliably tell you when it committed. Which sets up the last act, and it's the constructive one. Because if the words don't tell you, maybe the internal state does.
This is your thread, the probe.
So computing that commitment boundary by truncation is great for science and useless in deployment. It takes up to N plus one forward passes. You basically run the model again for every sentence. Nobody's doing that live. So they ask, is the commitment a stable internal thing you could just read off in a single pass? A probe, if you haven't met the term, is a tiny classifier, sometimes barely more than a linear readout, that takes the big model's hidden activations as input and predicts some property. The point is diagnostic. If a simple probe can read property X off the internal state, then X is actually represented in there. It's a stethoscope, not a surgeon. It listens. It doesn't change anything.
And what's it listening for here?
Which of three stages the model is in at each step? No guess yet, holding a guess that's different from the final answer, or committed to the final answer. They train a small attention-based probe that reads a sliding window of recent hidden states. And it's causal in the time series sense. It only looks backward at what's already been generated, which is exactly what lets you run it live as a tripwire.
Here's where I'd want to know if it actually generalizes. Because a probe that only works on the data it was trained on is just memorizing surface quirks.
That's the load-bearing test, and it's the part that genuinely impressed me. They train the probe only on one math dataset, Math 500. Then they point it at completely different things. AIM, which is harder competition math. Zebra Logic, which is logic puzzles. GPQA, graduate level science multiple choice. Different domains entirely. And the detection rates are often above 90%, though it's uneven, dipping to the high 60s and 70s out of distribution. And on one GEMMA configuration, the in-distribution detection is only 62%. So the probe found something general. But hold on to that unevenness, because there's a caveat on the firing side, too.
So the body language reads the same across very different conversations, mostly. Which is the evidence that it's a real mechanism, not a quirk.
And then they wire it in as an early exit trigger. When the probe says, final guess for a few consecutive steps, you stop thinking and answer. The meter's been running while the cab sits at your destination. This is noticing you've arrived and getting out.
Give me the numbers, because early exit papers live and die on the accuracy you give up.
Take GPTOS on Math 500 as the worked example. At a conservative setting, the early exit recovers 98% of the full accuracy, 78% versus 80, while cutting 26% of the tokens. Push it more aggressively, and you get 89% of the accuracy, 71 versus 80, saving 39% of tokens. And across some model dataset combinations, the average savings hit up to 55%.
And the comparison that makes it a real result?
The dumb baseline. The obvious thing you'd do instead is just chop every chain of thought at a fixed percentage, always cut at, say, the halfway mark. At a matched truncation level, that fixed cutoff drops accuracy by 23 points, from 80% down to 57.
Because a fixed cutoff exploits the average and fails on the specific trip. Some problems commit at 15%, some at 60%. The smart exit adapts per trace. The dumb one gets out of the cab after 4 miles, regardless of where you were going.
That's the taxi, exactly. The probe beats the fixed cutoff at every operating point, which is the proof it's reading real per-trace structure and not just average statistics.
Okay, so that's the paper at its most flattering. I want to spend a minute being the skeptic, because I think there's one crack here that genuinely matters. And the authors, to their real credit, flag it themselves.
Go for it, Finn. This is the one I want to hear you press on.
It's the answer-forcing suffix. The entire measurement is, what would the model say if I forced it to answer right now, with greedy decoding? But that forcing is itself an intervention. The suffix, therefore the answer is, pushes the model toward committing. So, commitment in this paper really means the answer the model blurts out when interrupted. And that's a meaningfully weaker claim than the model has made up its mind. Here's the gap. A step could be doing real work redistributing probability among candidate answers, genuinely shifting the model's internal odds without ever flipping which answer is on top. Greedy decoding only sees the top answer. So all that under-the-hood reweighting would be completely invisible to this method, and it'd get labeled inert.
And yet the abstract uses language like the model has already internally fixed its answer.
That's stronger than forced greedy decode strictly licenses. Now, I'll grant the perturbation experiment does a lot to rescue it. When you scramble the post-boundary numbers and 95% of answers survive, that's not just the top answer didn't flip, that's you can physically damage this text and nothing happens. That upgrades it from stable blurt toward genuine commitment. I take that point.
But you're not all the way there. And before you go on, there's that other crack on the probe, the one I flagged earlier. Because the early exit story leans on the probe firing at the right moment.
Right, the premature firing problem. The whole value of an early exit is that it pulls the cord after the model's committed, not before. But out of distribution, the probe fires early in some settings as much as 20 or 21% of the time. That's the cab pulling over a few blocks short. And when it fires early, you're cutting off reasoning that was still doing real work, which is exactly the accuracy you can't afford to lose. So the headline, above 90% detection, is the best case, not the typical case.
So it's not a clean tripwire everywhere. The deployment story is real, but the error mode is the costly direction.
Exactly. And that connects to the deeper point. No measurable effect on the elicited final answer in a single pass is not the same as useless. That's the word epiphenomenal doing more work than the evidence carries. Those post-boundary tokens could be calibrating the model's internal confidence. They could matter for a follow-up turn in a conversation. And here's the one that really nags at me. The model generates that tail consistently, reliably, in volume. Something that gets produced that reliably is probably doing something during training, even if it's inert at inference. Evolution doesn't usually keep an organ that does nothing.
That's fair. And the authors say as much. They explicitly caution against reading causally inert at inference as functionally useless. Though I'd add two more to your pile. One is the sample selection. They throw out problems the model gets right with no chain of thought at all, and they discard traces with first token collisions, ambiguous cases, which is around 9% on average, but weirdly, 57% for Gemma on AIM.
So the clean picture of epiphenomenal reasoning describes a filtered population, problems where thinking helps and answers are cleanly distinguishable. The prevalence in the wild could look different.
And the other is that the probe is trained on labels the truncation method itself produced, so it inherits whatever bias is in that method. The out-of-distribution transfer is reassuring where it holds, but all four benchmarks are short answer math, logic, and multiple choice. That's a narrow slice of what we'd call reasoning. No code, no open-ended writing, no agentic tool use. And in those settings, a single final answer might not even be a meaningful thing to commit to.
Which connects to a near simultaneous paper they position against, Bapana and colleagues, the reasoning theater work. That group showed the final answer is decodable from the model's internals before it's ever written down. This paper's claim is strictly broader. Not just that the answer's encoded early, but that the later text, including the apparent self-correction, is causally inert.
And they disagree on what drives the timing, which I find telling. Bapana's group found it tracks task difficulty. This paper finds model family matters more. Two teams looking at the same phenomenon from slightly different angles, landing on different stories about the cause. That's not a rivalry. That's a field figuring out something genuinely new in real time and not converged yet.
So where does that leave the safety hope? Because that's the part I keep circling back to.
I think it leaves it in a specific, sober place. The dream was that you could monitor a model by reading its chain of thought. Watch the words for trouble. This says the words will show you a model that looks like it's still deliberating well after the decision is causally locked. So text-level monitoring isn't enough on its own. You'd want representation-level signals next to it, and the paper's own probes are a small proof that that's at least feasible, even if they're not yet reliable enough to trust blind.
And the constructive direction they gesture at, and I think this is the right one, is training objectives that actually align the verbalized trace with the real answer formation process. Make the words track the computation. Right now, nothing forces them to.
That's the thing I'll carry out of this paper. We built these systems to think out loud, partly so we could watch them think. And it turns out a lot of the thinking out loud is happening after the thinking is done.
With the honest asterisk that done here means done under forced answering. I still don't think the perturbation result fully closes that gap to the model has made up its mind. It gets close, closer than I expected going in, but the word epiphenomenal is carrying a connotation this single pass evidence doesn't quite earn. That's the open question I'd want the follow-up work to settle.
And that's a good place to leave it. Genuinely open. The phenomenon is robust. The causal evidence is strong. The efficiency payoff is real and deployable today, with the caveat that the probe still fires early often enough that you'd want to tune it carefully. What it all means about whether the model has decided, that's still being argued, including by us.
If you want to dig in yourself, the paper and a few related reads are in the show notes, including the concurrent work we mentioned.
And if you want the full transcript with the jargon defined inline, plus the concept pages that link this episode to the other interpretability work we've covered, that's all on paperdive.ai.
This has been AI Papers, a deep dive. Thanks for listening. And the next time a model tells you, wait, let me just double check that, you might wonder whether it already knows.